Hello, everybody. James here, and we're not doing the story time point whatever anymore, so it's just Ask Dutch Anything, I think 14. How are you? Oh, I know how you are. I've been speaking to you for ages beforehand. Why do we do the plugs? Tell us about books.
Are you going to do the plugs now?
No, you can do it. Go on.
All right, fans. Welcome to Storytime with Dutch. These are my two books that I keep talking about. These books are some really, really entertaining stories from the past. I'm getting ready to write another one. I always said there's going to be three books. The first one is The World According to Dutch, which covers my early years in professional wrestling business and some of the other stuff I've done. This is called Tales from a Dirt Road. Actually, I like this book a lot. And you can get them by emailing Dirty Dutch Mantel with two L's at gmail.com, and I'll get right back to you on how you can get your own autographed copy of these books sent directly to you. Mm-hmm. So email me and I'll get back to you on it.
Yeah. Usually I just rush through the plugs there, but I thought we needed a nice breather to really absorb the message of why you should be buying books, especially in the run-up. It's a bit early for Christmas, but you know what? It's never too early to buy that Christmas present. And guess what? I've got two books as well. Owen Hart, King of Pranks, and The Rock one, which is down on the other side of the room. I can't reach it.
Let me ask you a question. I haven't asked you this.
Okay.
What is one of the biggest pranks that Owen Hart did?
I'm not even going to tell you. No, I can't actually say where I said this, but the example I gave to somebody for some reason is the one where he and Bruce were winding up Brian Pillman in a hotel room because they'd sent Brian Pillman, this is in the late 80s, Calgary, and they'd sent Brian Pillman off to do like an anti-drug speech at an old folks home, which itself was a rib. And then,
No, they didn't.
Yes, they did, and it was in the late evening as well, so they actually had to wake up a lot of the old folks to do it. And I think this was set up by Bruce doing Stu Hart, going, Brian, you need to go to, you know, that kind of thing. Anyway, so when they got back to the hotel at about, I don't know, 2 or 3 a.m., they'd set it up where Brian walks in, turns on the light switch, and there's no light because he'd taken all the light bulbs out. And then he walks over to the bathroom, opens the door, and they left a bucket full of water on him. So he's walking around with a bucket on his head, soaking wet. And with no lights on. And then he was expecting a date, a lady that he was going to hook up with that night. And I think he must have given like the room key or something like that. So he sees like a shuffling, a silhouette, sort of disturbing the sheets of the bed. So he climbs into bed, puts his arm around what isn't a date, but is actually a stray dog that they'd captured outside the hotel and put it in Brian's leather jacket and then left it in the bed for him to find. So it's very much a multi-tiered sort of thing.
I wonder, though, the biggest hole I see putting a dog in the bed, the dog wasn't going to stay in the bed. And why didn't the dog bark?
Well, it probably did when Brian started trying to do things to it.
Okay. I have my doubts on that one, but good story.
Okay, we have questions for you. Many, many questions. Many, many fans are writing in every single week. And if you want to be one of those fans writing in, you do it to questionsfordutch@gmail.com. And the following have done just that. And the first question is from somebody who I'm really going to screw up their surname, Carl Kramelmeyer, I think, or nearly that.
Oh, Kramermeyer. I know Kramer. Who it is.
Okay. Do you know who it is?
No.
Okay. Has Dutch worked with Killer Khan or have any memories of him? He seems to be somewhat forgotten these days, but was over as a villain in the WWF for breaking Andre's ankle with the top rope knee drop. George Michael's sports machine even put the angle over. Thanks. I enjoy the program.
I think I met Killer Khan either one or two places, either Atlanta or Florida. I didn't know him that well. I didn't actually know anybody who knew him that well. I don't know who he traveled with, but he was a big guy. I don't think he was, he could have been Japanese, but he had a more of a, what they call a Mongol look to him. And he wasn't necessarily a wrestler. He just went out there and just beat you up. But not physically beat you up like a Brody or a Hansen, but, you know, he attempted to just to maul you. But he had a great look. And if you'd walk in somewhere and you see somebody like Khan standing there, you'd back up. I would. And I'm fearless. You know I'm fearless. Mm-hmm. But I would back up.
Yeah, but you get on with everyone.
I do. I would like, seriously, if anybody watched our podcast from last week, the last one we did, I would like to know what somebody like Killer Khan would do if they met a Jamie Dundee. If they met a Jamie Dundee. And then I would like to hear Jamie's story about meeting somebody like Killer Khan. Because, hey, if Jamie don't know the answer, he'll just make up something. But that was last week, and I totally, totally enjoyed my time interviewing Jamie Dundee. But Khan was a big guy. He probably weighed 260, 270. And he wasn't all cut up. He was just a big guy, but not fat, just a big guy, and looked the part.
Was he? I know you don't know him that well, or really spent very much time with him. But how big of a draw was he over in the States? Because he spent a couple of times in WWF, and he would just appear here and there in the territories. Was he almost like an Abdullah the Butcher kind of person, where you could only use him so much?
No, he was. I don't think he was. How long was he in the States? Period.
Quite a few years. I mean, he would go back to Japan often. But yeah, he did come over for quite a number of years.
Abdullah was much more physical. And I think for the styles, I think Butcher was actually better than Khan. I think Khan was just younger. So...
Next question, and this one's going to be a big one because I actually did my own research on this as well. So, the Taskmaster asks, do you have any information on Ric Flair's Phantom NWA Championship switches with Jack Veneno in the Dominican Republic or Carlos Colon in San Juan around 82-83?
Just scuttlebutt. I do recall that when Flair went to Dominican Republic, and they had a pretty good size arena there. And the people, Veneno was he was the Carlos Colon of Dominican Republic. He was the resident babyface. Now, the story Flair tells is that, I forgot how this match was going to end, but I think the people were so anti-Ric Flair, which is easy to be, and I've heard some of the stories over there, those people were violent. So I think it, and I can't say this is true, it's not true, but it is believable to the point to where Flair just says, screw this, if I do this finish they want me to do, they're going to kill me, which is a good thought to have. Mm-hmm. When you see people with blood in their eyes saying, you know, I might want to go get on that plane tomorrow or whenever. And if I do this, I don't think I'd be able to do this. He said he changed the finish, and he just told the referee, or he told Veneno to tell the referee, because they speak Spanish there, just count me down. So now the people are happy. Nobody's wanting to kill Flair. So as soon as the match is over, he hits the ankle express with the security and goes back to the dressing room. That's what I heard. And then I think when they, and I have no idea of what Rick said to the St. Louis office who booked him. You know, it's not like, how was the match tonight, Rick, with Veneno and Dominican Republic? Oh yeah, I had to put him over. What? You put him over? He said, yeah, he walked out with the belt. Of course, the next thing they want to know is, did anybody get pictures? Did they have video? Of course they did, but they played it back, and it was a really screwed up version of the count. It was, and it's almost the same count, two, and almost the same count again, but it was, you know, redubbed. three times. Mm-hmm. So it looked like it looked clunky anyway. But I think what happened is that he came to Puerto Rico, I think a month later, and then they put the belt back on Flair. So at least Veneno had something to show his fans how that he's no longer the champion.
They actually amazingly didn't. Supposedly, just the last bit is that what had happened was in the first one is that I think the time limit had expired and Rick was about to go out with the sleeper. So it was actually a draw. And then I think Rick just left the belt with Jack and just went, look, just hold it, you know, pretend that you're the champion. Mm-hmm. And then you can announce it on TV later. The second time is what you exactly described with the pin. And then Ric Flair's pinned again. And this time, technically it's a clean pin, so Jack Veneno should have been the champion. And Rick just left again. And then the way they explained it on Dominican Republic and Republic TV as why Jack wouldn't remain the champion is because he explained something to the effect of, oh, well, I don't want to leave the island. If I was NWA world champion, I'd have to go here, there and everywhere, and I could never leave my beautiful home of Dominican Republic. And so basically he relinquished the belt that he never should have had in the first place. Mm-hmm. And then NWA side, nothing was ever mentioned.
Yeah, this was like 40 years ago anyway.
Mm-hmm.
They may have bought that because I don't know how old the Dominican Republic territory was, but I think it was fairly new. They had just started one there because I think Puerto Rico started like 75, 75, 76. Dominican Republic started probably, on a larger scale, they had probably always had little independent shows, but I think they started about the same time, maybe a little later. But when I was there, they wanted me to go and I refused to go. I'd heard really scary stories that I said, no, just I don't want to go. And they never pressed me to go. And the reason they didn't press me to go was because we were drawing so much money in Puerto Rico, they didn't want me going over there and maybe getting hurt. I didn't want to get hurt myself. Mm-hmm. But it would affect their bottom line. So I never made Dominican Republic, nor did I ever want to.
Rick claimed that he was paid five. I think this was for the second match because he brought Roddy Piper with him as a backup. He was paid what he claimed was $5,000 for the match, and he spent half of it in the bar that night. And Roddy Piper got paid $500 and a spittoon full of cocaine.
Who said that?
Blair.
The $5,000, I'm probably not disbelieving. That seems to be a high payoff, especially for that time. Because $5,000 then was $20,000 or $25,000 today. And he said he went to the bar and he did what now?
Spent half of it that night.
Well, he could have, I guess. I don't know. But, and what do you say, Roddy Piper did it all in cocaine?
No, he got $500 in a spittoon full of cocaine.
That was a lot of cocaine. Because cocaine was, that was one of their drop-off points, was Dominican Republic, to get into the States. And that may have been true.
Now, the other one...
But who knows what Ric Flair says is true or not. So take it with a grain of salt like I did.
Now, the other one is the Carlos Colon title change. Now, this is even murkier because I don't think it was ever recorded. I don't know if there's any photos. But the match where Carlos supposedly won the belt was meant to be a title, you know, Ric Flair's NWA world title versus the local title that Carlos had with WWC. And apparently, Carlos may have won clean, prearranged. It wasn't the same situation where, you know, it was a switch at the end of the match to stop a crowd riot or anything like that. Why, if that is true, it went down like that, why would Rick agree to lose the belt to Carlos and maybe not with the NWA board's approval?
Please. Hey. Gotta look at me.
Mm-hmm.
They could have made, and this is what I think happened, they could have made a side deal with Rick and say, we'll give you $5,000 to kind of drop it, but it really won't be official. But we'll just show the people so we can show back on our TV that Carlos won the title. You know, I need to check on that. I'm sure that Carlos still has a couple of sons involved in the wrestling business. And I would call Carlos, but I think he has some issues now with Parkinson's, I heard. But he'd probably tell me. But I've heard that story. So, see, a lot of things happen in wrestling behind the closed doors that nobody ever hears about, unless you talk about one of the main participants. And I've never heard Rick taking that money, but if he can make a side deal it doesn't affect anybody, and the office in St. Louis doesn't find out about it. Of course, they did, but again, that's one of those mysteries that you'll never know the truth.
I would love for you to get in touch with Carlos and ask him if you could. That would be unbelievable, because I'd love to know that mystery as well. So just one more thing. And then
so
we'll
are
on.
You are you requesting for me to seek a private audience with Carlos?
Or was it that formal?
Could be. No, but I'll call Eddie. Let's see what he says.
Yeah, I'd love to know that. Also, supposedly, is an...
And he could be... He might be one of our guests.
Eddie Colon.
Yeah, he'd like to do it.
Yeah, that should be. I was going to say something then, but I'll keep it in my head. Apparently, a couple of weeks later, supposedly a rematch may have happened between Flair and Carlos Colon in Miami, although little is known about this match, or even if it took place as well. So... But that's a good mystery that we may be able to get to the bottom of. But for now, we're going to move on to our next question.
And what year was this?
83, early 83.
Okay.
So, January 83. Next question. Aaron from New Zealand. Hi there, Dutch and James. I have a question I hope can be answered. Did Dutch ever come up with an angle that he knew would draw but either couldn't work it into the right show promotion, or more importantly, Dutch couldn't find the right wrestlers to pull off the idea he'd planned out?
Sure. Had a lot of most recent ones is when I popped up on WWE TV as the manager for Alberto Del Rio. I'm thinking from day one, boy, this thing is going to bomb worse than Hiroshima. It's going to really stink the joint out. So, and I had been hurt and I came back. And all of a sudden, I left hating Alberto Del Rio and then came back as his manager, which didn't make one bit of sense. Nor did we even try to explain it. But my idea was, we did a deal where, this is about the fourth weekend, and I heard what they wanted to do, and I suggested for us to do it another way. That it was all a scam from the beginning. Like, this answers the question, why am I with Del Rio? Because I hated him. So I thought, Del Rio's in the ring, and here comes Jack Swagger to the top of the ramp, talking to me like, you know, good SOB, blah, 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 blah. This whole time you had me convinced you hated it, that son of a gun in the ring, blah, 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 blah. And I believe you. And he comes down, and I had crutches. So... he came down and he kicks a crutch out from under me and I go down. So Del Rio comes out to defend me. And he says, why don't you pick on somebody who will fight back? So he goes up the ramp a little bit and he helps get me up, and I'm up and I got my crutches here. And he challenges Jack for a match. And when he goes to get in the ring, as soon as he turns around, I hit him with the crutch. Down he goes, and me and Jack beat the living crap out of him. Then I can go back and say, hey, I set up late at night thinking about a way to get you, and now I'm happy. So, And then him and Jack could have started the angle, and I could have been back a heel. Now everything's right with the universe, and it would have drawn some money. Actually, it would have gotten me back in position I needed to be in. Truth be told, I shouldn't have even been out there anyway because of my physical conditioning. But when I give it to them, they went, "Eh, okay, well, I'll give it to you."
I've never asked you this. How did you actually break your leg initially? How did that happen?
I had a knee surgery.
Right.
And I was recovering from the knee surgery. I had the guy coming out like two or three times a week, the rehab guy. And I was doing it from home. And one day I got up to stretch. And I was behind it's a two-seater couch, a love seat, I guess you call it. And I was stretching, and when I stretched I broke my left leg. When I stretched my right leg and I put it on top of the couch and I'm leaning forward, stretching, I heard a pop. And I broke my femur on my left leg in two places. That's the biggest bone in the body. And down I went. And from then on out, it's been a problem.
So just from stretching?
Well, when I think I hit it, my leg either collapsed and my foot was up underneath the back of the love seat. Mm-hmm. So when I went down, my foot caught.
Ah.
And the weird thing about it is it didn't even hurt that much. It was a very, very uneasy feeling. But as far as sheer pain, I didn't have it. I could move my leg like this way and then this way, and I could bring my knee up. But I couldn't raise the leg like this because it was just connected. The bones were broken. That femur was broken. So then I went into the hospital and it got infected. How? I don't know. And I was actually, they actually thought I had brain damage. I would have brain damage because of the circulation or something. But I got better. I didn't get better on my leg. I got better where I could talk. But it was a tough go. So when I actually went back to WWE, I was still really, really hurt.
I'm surprised they let you carry on flying, you know, from town to town, especially because, I mean, this will explain why you were in the little rascal thing for the second
round. Yeah, I could have died. That'd have been a hell of a lawsuit. You would have never met me, James. See, our friendship would have never have happened had I kind of eat the bullet, as they say. Mm. So, but anyway, that's what happened. Hang on a second. Hang on a second.
Okay, next question. Dylan Calvert. Hello, hope all is well. What is your
opinion? I got to ask you a question.
Oh, go on.
Did we get any kind of comments off our last guest, Jamie Dundee?
You know full well that I don't know at this time whether we got any comments about Jamie Dundee.
Is it this Tuesday?
This is Tuesday. We don't even make it a point to change our clothes to appear to be a different day.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
We don't kayfabe our audience, brother.
It's not the appearance. It's the content. It's what it is. Okay, exactly. Continue. Exactly. Continue.
Dylan Calvert, hello, hope all is well. What is your opinion on Jimmy Superfly Snuka? Do you think he had a dark side? Thanks.
Well, a lot of questions about that young man. And I've heard that story about that lady. I wasn't there, but I have no reason to doubt it. It could have happened. And I think Vince got him out of a lot of trouble, I think. Mm-hmm. And whatever happened, happened. So, yes, wrestling has it's like all pro sports. If you really want to delve underneath the surface, there's a lot of dark sides to a lot of things. Wrestling really has one. And I think the Jimmy Snuka story is one of them. Can I prove it? No. Do I want to prove it? No. But could have happened? Yes, very, very possibly it could have happened.
Did you ever share a territory with Jimmy?
I never met Jimmy. I think maybe one time, because he was in like WWF. I was like much later. Like he was in the 80s.
I'm trying to think. The only time you may have met him, I think he was in like the old Hall of Fame in 96, maybe. Might be getting that completely. No. He was in Survivor Series 96 for like a one-off, so that's probably, maybe you met him there, I don't know. But for now, we'll move on. Matt Green, hey guys, hope all is well your way. Dutch, is there any wrestler in AEW or WWE you think you'd have a great match with, you know, back, you know, before the leg break and everything? Or is there anyone you wish you could have worked with? Okay, so Prime Fitz, Dutch Mantel versus one person wrestling today, who would you pick?
Well, if two guys can work and one guy has a little bit of heat and the other guy he's over with the crowd, there's no reason why you can't have bangers with a lot of these guys. See, Brian Danielson, of course, he does most of the match on his own. You just got to be there. And sometimes it's like anything else. The combination, does it work together? And I think I would have a good match with Moxley. MJF, have a great match with him. Name somebody else.
Are we talking AEW? Well, it says WWE saying, as well. I genuinely think you'd have a great match with Dominic.
Yeah, after I beat the shit out of him.
Yeah, of course.
Because he stole my name. Dirty. Well,
exactly. The dirty. Reason.
See? Yeah, and me calling him a egg sucking dog. And see, I stole that from Terry Funk. I used to love his interviews. He was so entertaining. Egg sucking dog. But yeah, there's a lot of guys there I would have had great matches with.
You could have a name tag with the word dirty on it on a pole match with you and Dominic, and then whoever gets it, or on the ladder, then whoever gets it gets to be dirty for the rest of their lives.
Well, actually, I have a little bit of an out on this.
Okay.
I was called Sucio Dutch, which is dirty in Spanish. Sucio. It's Sucio. I think it's dirty. Of course, I spelled it Suzio, but same thing. But I would have had a good match. I would have had a good match. And with Mil Mascaris. Not Mil Mascaris. Who's his daddy's name? Dominic Mysterio.
Right.
I'd have had a great match with him. Yeah, if you have a guy who can work and is not so much that has movement, I'd have a great match with him.
I've never asked you this before. What's easier for you, heel or babyface? Because obviously with the heel, you're going to be calling the match as well. Which do you prefer?
Heel. I like control. And because it was easier to do for me, I was a natural heel anyway. So I think being heel, I like it better.
We should move on. And I'm very sorry I've deleted your name, whoever wrote this in, but it's a good question. Where is Shoe Baby? I hope it has survived and is still around. And what was your inspiration for using the bullwhip? So first questions first, you didn't throw the whip away, did you?
The whip threw itself away.
Really?
This is what happened. I had about three whips one time. And a whip, carrying it around in your bag with a lot of your outfits wet from the perspiration, eventually it wears the leather. It just wears thin. And so I have been popping them on, using them on opponents. They would break. So, and one guy, some fans grabbed it, and we had a tug of war back and forth, and pop. Then I went down on the floor, which they all just thought that was hilarious. But they had the rest of my whip. And I think the third whip I had, I think I ended up selling it because to a collector, and they wanted me to sign the handle. So I saw that's what happened to her. But I've had actually more whips than that. But I started with a whip in Atlanta. I didn't know what to do with it till I went to mid-South in Louisiana, Mississippi, part of Texas, and Arkansas. I was riding with Ernie Ladd. I loved riding with Ernie Ladd. It was like a history lesson every time I got in the car. And that's where I learned a lot of, you know, Ernie's history. He attended a school in, I think it was in Louisiana, called Grambling University, which is now called an HBCU, historically black college or university. And he played football there under a legendary coach. And I'm a huge football fan called, he played at Grambling. And I can't remember the coach's name. But anyway, but he's talking one day and we're talking wrestling and driving down the road. And he says, you know, if you took that whip to the ring and just have the whip, because the whip was the image of the slave master. See, they call it, you ever heard white people called crackers?
Mm-hmm.
Crackers, you know where that comes from?
Well, the whip.
Well, yeah, it's called a cracker too. But Ernie told me this. He says, in the old days when they had the slaves out in the fields picking cotton, when they heard that pop of the whip, they heard that crack, that's what they would call the here comes the cracker. So it actually meant they could hear the whip, but at the end of the whip was the on a horse was a slave master or somebody hired to watch those fields. So, and he says, and I have actually gone out, this is years and years ago, I went to a county in Mississippi, and somebody told me that the population of the county is like 90% black. So when I got to the matches that day, of course, I got the whip. And who was my opponent? Was, I think it was, I can't remember.
It was the snowman. I think we've...
Yeah, it's the snowman, and he was there. And on the way out there, you could just feel the heat in that building. And it wasn't wrestling heat either. They were standing up, and, you know, they weren't saying nothing, which was an eerie feeling. I went, damn, these son of bitches, they're not playing. So I got in the ring, and, of course, I lose, and I get my whip to try to whip the guy, and he takes it away from me. And when he comes down on top of me with that whip one time, the roof came off. And I give him a couple more shots, boom, boom, and I rolled out. But that cranked him up, buddy. So, but Ernie Ladd gave me that idea. So I did it. And I used to ride up down the road with him. And he said, man, when you crack that whip in the ring, he says, chills run up my spine. He said when he was a kid, his grandmother would call all the kids, the grandkids around, and they'd sit in front of the fire, and she'd tell stories about the days gone by. That's how he knew so much about it. So, and I'm thinking now, you know, all I hear is just they had slaves, and sometimes you hear they're mistreated, but you don't know how bad they were mistreated until you have somebody like Ernie telling you the story. So, but that's my story with Ernie Ladd and the bullwhip. So
the coach's name was Eddie Robinson Sr.
Eddie Robinson, that was him. A legendary coach.
Mm-hmm.
Even today, legend. He had like 11-0 seasons or 10-0 seasons or how many games they played. Of course, back in those days, and I don't think people even realize this, that black colleges didn't play any white colleges. They just played all black colleges played black colleges. This is back in the late 70s and the early 80s. So these are things that pass you in the night that you never find out about until you ask somebody or you research it. And I don't know why anybody would want to research that unless the notion has been put in their head, like I just did.
Yeah, he was coach for the Grambling Tigers from 1941 to 42 and again from 45 to 1997, so 56 years. We're going to move on now. George Carl, Clearwater, Florida, without a question. Dutch, who had a long and storied career in the business. Sorry, put an extraneous word in. We all make decisions and do things that we've looked back at and wish we had done things differently. Do you have any regrets regarding your career and the choices you made? Is there a particular period of time that you wish you could change?
Well, the period I wish I could change. Yes, I made a lot of mistakes. I did. My mistake was I got in a hurry. You know, when I went to a place, you know, I preach patience all the time. But I wish I'd have been a more of an advocate of it early on, because let things play out a little more and see what they're going to do. But I was too busy chasing my star, I guess, that I wouldn't give a place a chance. What was the rest of the question? Anything?
Within wrestling, something where you were present in your career that you would like a do-over of?
Well, the getting in a hurry, and I've actually went to some territories and left before I started. I have no idea why. So I was my own worst enemy. So, yeah, thinking back at the time, I wish I'd have done some things quite a bit differently, to tell you the truth.
Do you remember one territory where you went there and didn't wrestle a single match?
Charlotte, Mid-Atlantic.
Really? What year?
This is in the 80s. And then there were a few more times that I worked Charlotte later on. And then I left there because they wanted to... I'd only been there like 8 months, and they wanted to send me to Florida to start a new territory when they wanted to take over everything. You know, they wanted to call it Charlotte South. And I thought to myself, well, why don't they just call it Tampa? I mean, it's already known as Tampa. Why try to explain it, Charlotte South? And I had just left there, and I didn't want to go back. So they booked me down there, and on the day of my appearance, I didn't show up.
Next one, Myron Davis. Dear Dutch, wrestler Tyree Pride is rarely mentioned. In fact, he is underrated. Tyree Pride literally owned the Bahamas title, but I don't recall him winning other titles during his tenure at Championship Wrestling from Florida, if I can get it right. Furthermore, I haven't seen any matches of Pride challenging Ric Flair for the NWA World Heavyweight Championship compared to Mike Graham or Mike Rotundo. Tell me more about Tyree Pride and your opinion why this talented athlete is underrated as well as unknown.
Okay, I went to Florida and Tyree Pride was there. And they told me when I got there, we use him more or less for just the Bahamas. That's what we use him for. So... And I was down there quite a while, but he was over. In the Bahamas, he was like a god in the Bahamas. I remember I did an angle with him and I think Jake the Snake. Where I forgot what Jake the Snake did, but he did something and they chased him back from the ring. Not just one or two or three guys. He had like 50 people on his ass.
And was he with Jamie Dundee?
No, he wasn't. But they really wanted Jake. I forgot what he did. He did something. And I remember the police were there. They were trying to hold him out of the dressing room. And Jake, there was an old rug on the floor. And he rolled himself up in the rug. And they were beating the hell out of the rug and kicking him and everything. And probably the rug probably saved him. And then they got enough security or police in there to get him back from the door. But that's what you get sometimes. You don't know how people are going to react. Because they told me, I was a booker, they said, don't do anything wild in the Bahamas. I said, why? Well, just don't. But I'm thinking, well, how are you really gonna draw money and get the people up if you don't try something wild? So, well, I tried something wild with Jake. And I remember he rolled himself up and in the rug. I mean, they could have got him, but they'd have to unroll him out of the rug. But it's the damnedest thing I ever saw. But from that time on out, I never tried anything. See, when we went over there, it was like baby faces over every match. Don't piss them off. Don't make them mad. Because you're going to have the same house. You drew off TV. You could make them mad on TV. Don't make them mad while they're there. Because now it's just, what, 3 steps, 4 steps, maybe 5? It wasn't a big arena. It was an outside arena. I remember one time, I forgot what it was. They had some match, and they had about an 8-foot-high wall around this outside little arena, maybe 10 foot. And they used to get on that wall and climb up in these big trees. And what they do while they're in there, they would start going back and forth and getting that tree swinging, moving. And I'm listening one night, and I heard, crackow. One of those trees had split. They had about 20 kids in it, and it just fell over in the street. Boom. And I thought he'd killed a couple. I thought some of those kids were hurt really bad. They limped off, but they would do that every show, a tree breaking like that. I never even thought that was a possibility till they got it swinging back and forth. And then it broke and down they went. And everybody in the arena looked back. So, but guess what? Nobody give a crap. The tree fell. They were in it. They shouldn't have done it. So,
just going back to the original question. So why was Tyree Pride even in Florida if he was only a draw in the Bahamas, or if they only let him do anything in the Bahamas?
I think he had something to do. Yeah, they got Florida TV, but they had it there on a local station too. I think he had something to do with that promotion. Now, that is not to say that we just iced him out. We would do little angles with him on an undercard and underneath match, because actually Florida is three territories. Basically, three territories. You had south of Tampa, maybe 50 miles south of Tampa, to Miami was a Hispanic type of wrestling that you had to put the Hispanics on there. And the middle was more of the American type style. And then when you went way up north around Jacksonville and Tallahassee, that was like Alabama and Georgia wrestling. So you actually had three different styles that you had to do. See, if you went to Miami and you put just, since it was such heavily populated by Hispanics, if you didn't have your Hispanics in the proper slots, you didn't draw. Because they're going to come see their local Hispanic star. In the middle, they'll see the regular, like the Mike, Steve Kearns and those types, they'll come see them there. And then when you go up north, you got to be, they were used to that Georgia, Alabama crazy style. So we do that there too. So, but it was a learning experience.
Okay. Next question, Max Harris, who has the best theme song other than ECW Sandman? This podcast makes me happy.
Well, get happier. The two best musical entrances that I can recall, and it's known to everybody, even outside wrestling, were the Stone Cold, the glass breaking, and Here He Comes. Everybody knows that. And the Undertaker. Everybody knows that too. So, and those two songs were written by a guy named Jim Johnson. And even though he's been out of that mold or for years and years, still, I think he did the best job at it, because I'm watching SmackDown, but the music doesn't seem like it used to be. It seems more like, I don't know, generic entrance music. But Stone Cold wasn't, and The Undertaker wasn't. And the thing about The Undertaker, his entrance, people come to see the entrance. And that was presented to them as part of the show. And can you imagine Undertaker coming out to different music?
Have you? I'm going to send you a video. Have you ever seen Star Wars? Someone has edited out all of the music at the end of the first Star Wars, A New Hope. And it's a great big scene where hundreds of people are waiting to see Luke and Han Solo and everyone get the medals. But they've taken it. Who did it escapes the name. Just one sec. John Williams. There you go. Mozart. Sorry, I didn't pause you, unpause before you said Mozart. John Williams, and they've taken that out, and all they've done is just make the most awkward scene in the entire world to sort of prove how important scores are to films.
Oh yeah, they are. Let me ask you this: the new attraction in Las Vegas. Have you read about it?
We talked about it last week.
Did we?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, the big
unbelievable.
Globe thing.
Then I saw some of the inside. Unbelievable.
I'll be seeing it next year. And I should be seeing you next year as well, by the way.
We'll go to it, because, I mean, it's impressive just watching it on video. So I wonder when they have a wrestling show in there. Would they have a wrestling show? They could.
I like to see the two fattest wrestlers they can get to have on the outside, like one on one half, one on the other.
Oh,
that'd be really good.
That would be good. I would like to watch Raw on the screen outside.
No, you wouldn't. You wouldn't put up with that for 3 hours.
Well, not for 3 hours, but but you know, you can see that from outer space. In the eye moving around. That's weird.
Yeah,
but
you could see my old next door neighbor from outer space as well. He was massive.
You know how much money it cost to build that arena?
Is it like a trillion or something, you're going to say?
Not that much.
Go on.
$2.3 billion, which is a lot of money. Anyway, it's impressive. You should see it.
Next question. Chris C. Hello, I'd like to ask Dutch about wrestlers that no-sell moves. I'm not talking about the aggressive parkour wrestlers of today, but the actual bad dudes in Dutch's experience, like Brody or the Road Warriors or Big Bubba, etc., who would intentionally no-sell the occasional move. From a booker's perspective, does this have to be done carefully, or is it just a given that some guys that need to look like monsters in the ring? Is it a tactic used by the booker, or is it more of a call it in the ring thing? What are Dutch's feelings on badasses no selling moves? Like Hawk with the pile driver in Memphis, that was a famous one.
Well, these big monster guys, they're going to do what they're going to do. Unless the guy they're working with owns the territory and controls the amount of money they're making, they can more or less do what they want to do. Abdullah does what he wants to do if he's not working with Baba, or when he wasn't working with Baba, you know, because he couldn't no-sell Baba because Baba get hot at him. But anybody else, you know, Abdullah would just keep charging. Brody, the same thing. He'd just keep coming. And when somebody no-sells you, or Stan Hansen, he's another one. When somebody no-sells you and they're bigger than you, what are you going to do? You're going to start swapping off, I mean, power punches? No, it's going to end badly for you because they're going to sell what they're going to sell. I think, you know, they can, it may not be right, but if somebody gives a pile driver to somebody and they come right up, you know, it doesn't seem right. But AEW, they do that all the time. These are regular sized guys. They go boom, boom, and one guy comes up, and all he does it, another pile driver back to him. I saw it the other day. They each gave each other four pile drivers, and neither one of them have yet to sell it.
It's been weeks.
So there's nothing you can do if the guy's just not going to sell it. Is, I don't know what to do. Just get out of it with the least amount of damage possible.
Do you remember that, the Road Warriors coming into Memphis? Were you there at the time?
I remember them coming in, yeah.
Yeah, I think it was one of the more famous things where, you know, Jerry Lawler hits port with the pile driver and he just stands right up and, you know, they just continue on from that. I mean, it was pre-planned and everything like that, but I don't know if that's something that you would advocate for as a booker.
So who did he hit with the pile driver?
Jerry Lawler hit Hawk, Road Warrior Hawk.
And that was set up. And that was set up because he was supposed to be the unstoppable object, him and his partner. So, but if it wasn't set up and he come up, I'm sure you wouldn't see Lawler giving it to him again. But those things were things like that. See, Lawler owned about, I don't know if he owned half the territory or he just owned half of Memphis. I don't know. But that was set up because Lawler booked the thing and he booked it. You know, he booked it to suit himself. He did a great job with it. I'll say that.
Did you see that thing a couple of weeks ago where I can't remember who it is? It might be an Orange Cassidy and someone who they hit each other with like four Canadian destroyers.
That's what I'm talking about. Mm. And boom, boom. And then he goes, he does it back to the guy. And then he does it back to the first guy. And then they both fall down or they do something. And I'm thinking, you know, if you're not going to sell it, why even do it? See, but if you tell one of those guys, why did you do that move? Well, he was going to do it back to me. I said, yeah, but you killed both of them, really. I mean, it looked great. They just, to me, they didn't have it situated right. Didn't have it. The placement was wrong, I think. Of course, it's not my match. They can do what they want to do. But it doesn't mean I got to like it.
Someone sent in a question, and I was thinking about this while it had nothing to do with the answer. But there was one question that I wanted to put on this list, and I completely forgot. And I don't know where it's gone. And it pertains to an interview that Steve Austin and The Undertaker did a few years ago on the WWE Network. And your name gets brought up quite a lot. And this was like a USWA kind of thing.
Yeah.
And did you tell Steve Austin to maybe test The Undertaker one day?
That's an old rib. No, I didn't tell him to test The Undertaker one day. Undertaker tested Stone Cold, was what it was. We were at a little spot show, 150 people there. I'm standing in the corner, and they squared off with each other. And I remember Taker was saying he was going to test Stone Cold or something. So they start rolling around on the mat. All of a sudden, they go from this working match where the people at least were a little cheering a little bit to like a semi-shoot. And the people are looking at each other like, what the hell? And they rolled around on the mat. And finally, I think Undertaker was on top of him or something. But, and finally I said, okay, Mark, let him up. I said, Mark, Mark, what? I said, let him up. You're killing the whole match. And he let him up. And they started working then and went back to the dressing room and they just laughed about it. And they went on. How was that brought up?
I've just thought of an idea. Why don't we listen to Steve Austin and The Undertaker talk about it for a minute, and then we can react to it.
Okay, okay.
One minute. Okay, we're back. Sorry, Dutch, that took a million years. Right, let's go.
And then they change the cards, so we're going to be working against each other, so you call me. I said, hey, man, we can't ride to the show together because I'm working heel. And I said, all right, man. I said, just watch yourself out there. I said, I'm going to stretch you. And I said, I'll see you there. You remember the story? I'll let you take over.
Well, I don't remember it being that pleasant.
Yeah.
When I heard it, which was probably over a payphone.
I hate phones.
I was like, it was one of those moments like I was like.
Oh, no, he didn't.
No, he didn't. No, he didn't say that, you know. So then I called Dutch. Or either Dutch was, I think Dutch might have even been staying at my apartment there.
Yeah.
I was like, you know what, what he just said to me? He said he's going to stretch my ass. He said, what are you going to do about it?
Oh, Dutch.
Right? And that was all it took. Okay, no. This ain't going to go down like that, right? So we got in there. I think I had you locked up some way. And I remember Dutch leaning over going, all right, let him up, you know. And,
you had me tied up six ways from Sunday in a couple damn different chutes, sugar holes, whatever you want to call them. I'm just laying there like, man, I because you weren't hurting me, but you just had me tied up. Right. I couldn't do nothing unless you let me go. And I'm thinking, really? I mean, you know, what is this all about? I thought we were supposed to hit the ropes and stuff. And so I tagged out. The other guy went in, and Dutch looked over him and goes, hell, what'd you do? Did you piss him off? You know, Dutch started the pot.
He'd stirring it all up.
And so I'm the idiot on the apron. He goes, hey, when you get back in there, well, when Soul Taker comes in there, pick his big ass up and slam him.
Right, I'm going to pause at that. Is that true that you told Austin to go in there and slam up Godfather?
I may have said that, but because I'm in the ring with Stone Cold, who had maybe been to 6 months, no more than that. Then you had Undertaker, who was in about 6 months to a year, no more than that. And then Godfather, who had about the same. I'm in there with three inexperienced guys. And, you know, it is what I remember that, you know, Steve ribs like that. All right, watch yourself. I'm stretching. But he's kidding. But Mark didn't know him that well and said, wait a minute. And I can see him thinking, did he really say that to me? So when I got him in there, I just wanted to say they had to get in there at some time. And then Mark just tied him up. And I do remember saying, okay, Mark, let him up. Let him up. Now, the last part, I might say, if you got Godfather in there, just pick him up and slam his ass. We had like 100 people there. Oh, my God. But, hey, that's the way it used to be. Nobody got mad. You know, everybody left the ring. And it was sorted out that, you know, it was a rib from the beginning. But I just wanted to keep my butt out of there. I didn't. Those were some, they were some big boys in there. So, but I do remember saying, let him up, Mark, you're killing the town. Like the town's already dead. Only 200 people, 150 people. So I'm saying we're having a funeral right now. So yes, that is true.
Is it true that you actually also stayed with The Undertaker? What, do you actually live with him in an apartment? How long for?
3 months. I was in the process of moving up there. So, and I stayed with Mark. And it was Mark and there's another guy in there. There's another guy in there that kept stealing my... He kept stealing something out of my bag. and I forgot what it was, like some lotion or something. No, shampoo. That's what it was. So one day, he, unbeknownst to him, Frankie Lancaster was the guy's name. I got my shampoo bottle out, but I replaced the shampoo with Nair.
Mm-hmm.
You know what Nair is, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So he was taking a shower one day, and all of a sudden, what the hell? Oh, he's screaming, what? What's in this bottle? I said, what's it say? It says shampoo, but it's not shampoo. Look here. And he was going bald anyway.
You just
and he showed me a handful process. Of hair. I went, oh, that's my Nair. What are you doing with that? Did you do this? I said, hey, I didn't do nothing, man. I just, you know, it's because I'm a hairy guy. I put it on sometimes, but guess what? I never had him go in my bag again.
Very quickly, you just said that it was all sorted out by the end of the evening. The best of recollection, I know you don't know the remember the story that well, but did they get on by the end of the night, or were they looking sideways at each other for a while longer, Undertaker and Steve Austin?
Nah. It was a rib. Well, it wasn't a rib, but it was a rib started on Steve's part. Not my part. I didn't even know what he had told him. But I found out later. So, and then they all kind of had a little chuckle about it. We went by about our business.
Yeah. The one thing they didn't have a chuckle with, I didn't play this bit of the video, but Godfather Soul Taker got Steve Austin in the back and went, don't you ever slam me again unless I call it. He was really upset apparently about it.
Oh, really? He did slam him?
Yeah, he actually got in there, got in the ring and slammed Godfather. And then after the match, Godfather was not happy boy about that at all.
Well, that's the way things are worked out. If you don't like something, tell the guy. You know, don't go in, hey, you MF or blah, blah, and then go to it. Tell him what the issue is and then straighten it out from there.
Steve
didn't give a crap anyway.
You would have been in the back going, ooh. I bet you somehow you would have been stirring it up.
Yeah, I may stir it up a little bit.
Right, okay, we're going to shut down this podcast now. Thank you very much for watching. As I said at the beginning, if you want to send your questions in, questionsfordutch@gmail.com. As we said before, we've got Dutch has got certificates, we've all got books. If you want Dutch's book signed, you go to dirtydutchmantel@gmail.com. That's two L's, Dirty Dutch Mantel. And you make your request there, and they're flying out flying off the shelves. You're going like hotcakes, all those cliches, but they're selling really, really well. So get yours in while you can. And, you know, if Dutch runs out of stock, he'll just buy some more and then sell you that.
I'll restock myself.
Yeah, but for now, thank you very much for watching. We'll catch you again this Friday, with the people.
Okay, Mark, let him up. Let him up. You're killing the town. Let's go. That was good.